When voters went to the ballot to kill the emergency manager law, the legislature responded in the lame duck session. It passed a new emergency manager law and made sure no voter initiative in the future would remove it. The governor signed that. Well, opponents sued on several claims, but a federal judge recently ruled against those claims, except for one. It alleged racial discrimination. That's because 52% of the state's African-American population is now under emergency managers in various communities. Only 2% of white residents live under emergency managers. With us to discuss why so many minority communities find their local governments and school districts in bad financial shape is University of Michigan Professor Reynolds Farley. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to make it clear, though, before we start, there are some white majority communities just as financially stressed, but they don't have emergency managers. That would be a red flag right there. I want to discuss, though, why so many black majority communities are struggling the way they are. What's happened to them that would mean they can't deal with basic government and school district finances?
The explanation is really quite straightforward. In 1970, there was a substantial blue-collar population in the black community sustained largely by manufacturing jobs in the automobile industry. Those jobs have decreased greatly in number. They have not disappeared, but the ability of a young man, sometimes a young woman, to graduate from high school and get a pretty high-paying job and to sustain a medium, middle-income living style, that has just disappeared. It certainly has affected very many white people in the state of Michigan, but we still are a state with moderate, although declining, levels of segregation. But wherever you have large concentrations of African Americans, very many of them have suffered in the restructuring of employment in recent years. And that's a key cause of this pattern of emergency financial managers in black cities and black school districts.
I recall one time you told me that, yes, the typical job, blue-collar job for a black male in the 70s was automobile industry. But today, the largest employer of African-American workers is in fast food restaurants. That's got to have a terrible effect on the family's bottom line.
It certainly does. It was the case that back in 1970, the typical employed black person in Michigan was working in manufacturing, and today they're working in the fast food industry.
So that means they're less likely to be homeowners. They're less likely to be able to afford real estate taxes. They're not making much in income taxes, or at least a lot less. That's all going to affect the bottom line of local government and local school districts, right?
Absolutely. Those who do own their own homes are going to have a very hard time paying the property tax on those homes. There's going to be a lot of foreclosures. They're not going to be buying a lot of retail goods, so sales tax revenue is going to decrease. It is a difficult time for the traditional blue-collar middle class in Michigan, but particularly for African Americans who have not gone on to college at quite the same rates whites have.
Let's talk about Detroit for a second, because that was the largest municipality under an emergency manager. That emergency manager is now gone. We have a settlement in the bankruptcy case. But they're still going to be struggling because so few black men are able to find jobs in Detroit. You cited to me one time, well, I know that the unemployment rate in Detroit in August officially was 14.6%. That's almost double Michigan's 7.4%. But that doesn't really tell the whole story among adult black males.
No. In recent years, among adult black men in Michigan, not much more than 50% of them have been employed. This is very, very different from what it was in 1970. Jobs are not out there. And jobs, including the jobs in manufacturing, are paying less than they paid in real terms 30 or 40 years ago.
So even if you're lucky enough to have a job, say at Detroit Manufacturing Systems, sure, where I know they're paying a starting wage of $10 per hour, it goes up from there, but that's a union shop, and they're paying $10 per hour, which is not what UAW used to pay at Chrysler or GM.
Absolutely.
Or Ford.
The starting wages used to be in the low 20s, and even in the big three now, the entry wages are close to $16, $17 an hour. So there's been a very big cutback in the wages paid to manufacturing workers. At the same time in Detroit, in Flint, Pontiac, and other places with large African-American populations, there has been some growth of the middle-class black population. They used to find it impossible to move to the suburbs. But thank goodness we've had a civil rights revolution, and the suburbs around Detroit and these other cities are quite open. So the middle class black population in many of these towns has moved out, further making further difficulties for raising taxes and getting tax revenue in these cities.
Now, as this discrimination allegation or claim goes through the federal courts, it might or might not have some kind of effect on policy eventually. I think, though, looking at the fact that so many black Americans are under emergency managers and some of those cities were no worse or better than so many white cities, it seems like there's quite a case there. But I'm wondering, in the long term, what's the policy answer here? What should the people in Lansing be doing about this situation where so many black-majority towns are driven to the point where the state steps in with an emergency manager?
We should think here in Michigan about having one standard property tax rate that would apply throughout the entire state. And the revenue from that property tax would be distributed to municipalities primarily on the basis of their population size. After the Kalkaska schools went broke in March of 93, the state moved in that direction with regard to supporting public education.
With Prop A. Right?
Yes.
Which has been more or less better than we had, but still got a lot of
Prop
problems.
Prop A has a lot of troubles, and there certainly are school districts with great difficulties, but there is a statewide base to educate our students. There's no reason we couldn't have a statewide property tax and allocate it on the basis of population size. And then we need to think about the number of suburban governments or urban governments. Around Detroit, there are about 124 suburban municipalities, each competing with the city of Detroit. Some reduction in that number would save taxpayers in the long run quite a bit of money.
So consolidation there and a flattened real estate tax. How do you think the wealthier white communities would feel about some of their tax dollars being evened out and maybe they wouldn't have the same kind of city services they had before?
With regard to schools, school districts have some ability to impose taxes for frills and new schools and extra services. Similarly, that might be possible if we had one statewide tax rate on property. I'm sure, though, there would be a lot of opposition and it would not be politically easy to innovate a statewide property tax or to get merge out of existence some of the many communities that are probably too small to continue in existence.
That's Reynolds Farley. He's a professor at the Population Studies Center and of sociology at the University of Michigan. Thanks so much.
Thank you.